Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about British director Mike Lee. And Mike, I know you teach a whole course on British film, and in fact, you're going to be teaching it again in spring 2021. So why don't you set it up for us by giving us a brief history of British cinema and segue into how Mike Lee fits in.
In 25 words?
Yes, or less.
To set the grounds here, when we think about British film, oftentimes we're thinking ironically about British television as much as British film, what's oftentimes referred to as heritage cinema. The TV version of it would be going back decades, upstairs, downstairs. More recent years, you know, Downton Abbey, things like that. And I'm not knocking that. I mean, it goes beyond eye candy. There's some really enjoyable, really worthwhile stuff there, but it's a certain image, isn't it? It's a kind of pastoral postcard of Great Britain. And even though class relations are dealt with, sometimes conflict is tamped down a bit there because after all, the drawing room is so well appointed and look at all the food on the table. And, you know, the servants are really well dressed, aren't they? And so, you know, it's at that level of surface pleasure sometimes. And so again, I sound like I'm knocking it. I'm really not. I mean, there's something to be said for that. But by the same token, to knock it slightly, heritage cinema is sometimes just the image that's conjured up. And if that's the TV version of it, you know, in film, we think of, you know, something like Howard's End, whatever, sort of that quality cinema. There's a whole other tradition in British film, certainly in recent decades, of verisimilitude, of you know, what's actual life like, and specifically like working class life. You know, Brits who are not members of parliament, much less the House of Lords in parliament, people who, you know, work and oftentimes in ethnic neighborhoods or you know, working class neighborhoods of whatever stripe. And the fact that they were oftentimes underrepresented in the heritage cinema. I mean, you know, they might be there, but as the guy driving the coach, the person putting food on your table. But what if we flip the equation and look more at that working class and into middle class, actually, but also looking more at provincial life, which includes provincial cities. You don't have to have everything in and around posh London. You know, not that all of London's posh, but you can get out into other cities. And that brings us to Mike Lee. He's one of the most important British film directors of his generation, which also includes people like Ken Loach and so on, who really do worry about working class life and who have a very realistic, sometimes quasi-documentary, but ironically, in its own way, theatrical way of presenting this. In Lee's own case, he's born in 1942 in the northern industrial city of Manchester. He's got a middle-class background. However, I quickly add, his father was a doctor. So you think, well, he's actually from, you know, higher up the ladder, if you will. But his father worked with the urban poor. So Mike Lee always had that identification with working-class life. Also, and this is something not oftentimes mentioned, it deserves more recognition biographically, that Mike Lee is Jewish. And he talks and writes about this, the fact that he identified with working-class people and with people who oftentimes were considered societal outsiders, if you will. And in his own case, because they're, you know, being Jewish in Great Britain, you're a distinct minority, right? And so he always was keenly aware that the family name actually was his grandfather's name was Meyer Lieberman. He came from Russia to the United Kingdom in 1902. And it was only in 1939 that Mike Lee's father changed the last name from Lieberman to Lee. On the brink of World War II, one could readily imagine why the name would be anglicized, but, you know, not to psychoanalyze on that, but the name was changed. But the fact that the Jewish upbringing is there, and Mike Lee himself has attributed the what he calls the tragic comic quality, that's his quote, the tragic comic quality of his films to his Jewish upbringing. He sees something within that ethnic tradition and so on that, you know, it's funny, but it's sad. And his movies all tend to be that way, right? The comedies even oftentimes have searingly serious moments in them. And they've got all that going on. The second thing that directly relates to his upbringing that way in terms of a religious background is he belonged to Jewish youth organizations that were distinctly socialist. And this is a generational thing. You know, in the United States, we would have called him a red diaper baby, right? It would have been of that generation, people from the 40s and 50s, whose parents were politically progressive. And oftentimes in terms of, you know, a Jewish liberal orientation that Mike Lee's very upfront in talking about, that this was what shaped him. So that when he started working in, well, he studied actually at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and we'll talk more about that in a bit, that there's a strong theatrical underpinning to his work too. He worked a lot directing plays before he started directing movies. But as for a lot of people in his generation, he began in television. British television was a great launching pad for people who went on to feature films, and he's of that generation for sure. And those are the forces shaping him. And a very quick quote from Mike Lee to that effect, how that upbringing really influenced his interest in working class life. Here's Mike Lee. "I am naturally drawn to people with ordinary working lives. I think it important to make films about a side of life that films do not normally deal with."
Well, I think it's become common to do the working class kind of story now, but you're right. It would be very daring to tell ordinary stories. I mean, I have a quote from him talking about choosing, you know, what kinds of stories to tell. And he says something about how you can't go to Hollywood and say, well, you know, my movie's about this teacher. And, you know, you sort of talk about it in general terms. He says, what's true of all of my films is that there isn't a single film where if you described it, anyone would be blown away, because it's about small moments, not the, you know, like overarching big moments, more about, you know, relationships and families and time going by and friendship and change. I mean, those kinds of big ideas, but told in small kind of ways with regular people, not necessarily movie star looking people, or where you have a huge budget to hire Johnny Depp or to, you know, go wild with costumes or whatever. It is stripped down in that way, which is, I think, what makes his movie successful. I think it's interesting you bring up the fact that he was Jewish, because every time I try to think of the title of the movie, Life is Sweet, I always think Life is Beautiful instead, which of course came out 6 years afterwards. But tell us about Life is Sweet in terms of the little bit about the plot and how well it did for Mike Lee.
Well, again, his movies avoid clean narrative arcs, as you mentioned. They're very much episodic, they're character studies. It's an example of where, like, nothing's going on and everything's going on. You know what I mean? It's just like everyday life, and the movie kind of floats along that way. And the movies also avoid tidy resolutions. I mean, they do have a definite sense of story structure, but it's kind of slack by design oftentimes. The thing that's significant about Life is Sweet, and that's a film that I've used in my course before, is that it's his third feature film. It's the breakthrough film. He had done Bleak Moments in 71, High Hopes in 88. He's getting recognition. He'd done a lot of work in TV and theater and so on. But Life is Sweet, which was released in 1990, is his breakthrough specifically in the United States. It gets him a lot of recognition in this country. And then he's on a roll after that. Films like Naked and Secrets and Lies and, you know, we'll talk about those presently, of course, but it was really then in that moment, early 90s, that he breaks through. One reason he's able to break through like that is that he and a partner formed what's called Thin Man Productions to produce his own feature films. The joke there is that Mike Lee himself is a rather, you know, ample figure, and his producer partner also was like of ample girth. And so neither one was a thin man. So because they're both kind of hefty, they had some fun. They thought, let's call it Thin Man Productions. And so you see the logo of like two skinny guys. Well, they're not skinny guys, right? So there's always that sense of humor in there. But on a pragmatic note, that he's forming his own production company, which really helps in terms of getting movies made that are not big budget. Marie, your point earlier, they're kind of stripped down. They're not, you know, fancy. They're, and the ones that are contemporary in setting, you actually shoot in a real, you know, working class house or something, right? And what also happens at this point is that he's been working with many of the same actors in theater and television, and he has what amounts almost to an acting troupe. And you really get a sense of how in Life is Sweet, actors like Timothy Spall, Alison Steadman, and Stephen Ree, David Thewlis, people who work with him a lot, they're simpatico, and they really do work together like a theater company. So what I want to do, actually, rather than talk too much about the specifics of Life is Sweet, which is very much a family comedy, the way in which it feels like a real family. This is a family of actors. These people work together a lot. You know what I mean? You have a sense of, you totally believe in their characters. Also, the dialogue is totally believable. Now, it's scripted, but I have to put an asterisk on that. And this is where we should talk about his working method, because this is where you see it in his earlier work, but in Life is Sweet, it really, really comes across quite powerfully. He deals a lot with his actors in a long rehearsal process. A reminder that Mike Lee himself was a graduate of a theater education, worked as a theater director. They do a lot of rehearsal. They do a lot of improvisation. He encourages the actors themselves to help write their roles. And so, in other words, that's quite striking, that the actors themselves in a workshop setting are creating what Mike Lee has called, quote, shaped raw material. This is when the script is still coming together. And then the scripted dialogue is written within days of shooting. So yes, it's scripted dialogue, but it plays like it's off the cuff. And there is a little bit of improvisation as they're actually shooting it, but it is a script. I mean, you can read the shooting script, you know, it's there on the page, but they're speaking as real people would speak and as the actors feel their characters should speak. So in terms of that relatively spontaneous way of working, which is on beautiful display in Life is Sweet, when that movie came out, the New York Times film critic at the time, Vincent Canby, quipped, quote, "such collaboration between director and actor would have sent Alfred Hitchcock into permanent retirement."
That's
the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite of how someone like Hitchcock, where Hitchcock, you know, notoriously said, you know, actors are cattle or should be treated like cattle. But this is a case where the cattle are actually getting a say in how the movie's being made. So that's why, rather than get too much into the particulars of Life is Sweet as a family comedy, simply the way it plays on screen, this is a real family, you feel. These people are really bickering. And the only other thing I'll add quickly is the setting in Life is Sweet. It's very much a working class neighborhood. The house is small. This is significant. There's a deliberate claustrophobia here. When you have a husband and wife bickering in the living room, one of their children will be like in the kitchen, which is maybe 10 feet away, and will join in, right? So when you have a family argument through the living room into the kitchen or upstairs to the bedroom, it's a small house. Everything carries and everyone's talking all at once. And that crowded quality, very pragmatically for a filmmaker, plays to advantage. You're not living in some palatial, you know, upstairs, downstairs kind of environment where you can be 30 or 40 feet away. No, you're 3 feet away. And this is why it's a really crowded kind of intimate setting, but intimacy has pluses and minuses. I mean, it's uncomfortable sometimes because you're arguing with somebody. And if you try to get away, going into the next room only puts you like, you know, 8 feet further over. If I seem fixated on that, it's because I think the actual setting, the actual domestic setting in a film like Life is Sweet has a lot to do with the story. When characters are arguing that they're at really close quarters and they have, and again, this comic tragic quality, it's a comedy, but there's some things in it in terms of the children, in terms of the squabbles they have in the family, which are not funny. I mean, funny and not funny, that kind of balance.
You know, I do want to mention from Life is Sweet that one of the, speaking of, you know, sort of improvisation, that Mike Lee and Timothy Spall spent an evening coming up with all these bizarre recipes that are featured in the movie. And then they checked with a professional chef who advised them about which ones were technically impossible. All the ones that appear in the film are, as Lee put it, all feasible, gross as it sounds. So I want to tell you some of the things on the menu of the Regret Rien, Regret Nothing restaurant includes black pudding and camembert soup, boiled bacon consomme, liver in lager, pork cyst, clams and ham, pan-fried cockle-based sauce, prune quiche, duck and chocolate sauce, tongues in a rhubarb hollandaise, tripe souffle, and grilled trotter with eggs over easy. So they must have had a blast coming up with those. But that's his way of doing things. He's a man without a script. He likes to let things just sort of organically go forward. And he also has said that he has never made a film that in some form didn't come out of direct experience. So that takes us to Secrets and Lies, which he says he made because he was concerned with adoption.
Yeah, I really think of all of his films, it's my favorite probably because I think it's a powerhouse in terms of acting. Brenda Blethyn, Marion Jean-Baptiste, Timothy Spall again. But just to backtrack, I wasn't going to talk too much about Life is Sweet in terms of the storyline, but as Marie said, when she gave the recipes, the idea of a working class hero, the Timothy Spall character in that film, wants to open his own restaurant. And, you know, he really doesn't have much background for that, but he's trying his best. And this is where it's like funny and also pathetic, right? This guy wants to open a restaurant. He's got all these grand ambitions. But, you know, what if you go to all that trouble and you don't have any customers? Or what if the recipes don't work out the way you hope they would? And so it's like funny and not funny. And so it's really, you know, kind of heartbreaking as well as heartwarming as you watch it. Working with some of those same actors in Secrets and Lies, the story is very much about adoption. And I don't want to spoil it to the extent of like, you know, what are all the secrets and all the lies? But namely that it really does deal with, you know, if you're a young adult woman and you've been raised by adoptive parents and the parents are now both deceased and that helps, you know, prompt you to want to find your birth mother, how do you go about doing that? And again, because these are very realistic films, Mike Lee takes you through the process, doesn't he? the agency you go to, somebody, a bureaucrat explaining the law and so on. And not quite that it's a Fred Wiseman documentary about institutions, but Mike Lee will take you to those places and show you the whole process. And it's really, there's a real-time quality to it. But in any event, without spoiling anything, if you are that woman and you're trying to find out who your birth mother was, and you know that British law is on your side here, you can get the records, you can find her. Should you follow through? And when you follow through, what will you find? Like, you know, who was my mother? Who is my mother? And, you know, what are some of the secrets and lies pertaining to that? So it's very much family centered, but at least two families here. Of course, the young woman wanting to find her original identity, her birth mother. Then, of course, the family of that woman, who's played by Brenda Blethyn. It's an absolutely astounding performance. And there are scenes in it that really play out in what I call excruciating real time. When again, without spoiling things completely, when mother and daughter are, you know, reunited the first time since birth, right, where the middle-aged mother and the younger daughter, you know, actually will meet, they go to have, you know, in UK, what do? You get a cup of tea, right? You know, you go to the cafe and you have a cup of tea. But there's a scene, it's the scene that's just an absolute knockout, is where the mother and daughter who really just met first time since birth, as I say, they're having an awkward and yet endearing conversation as they learn about each other. Mike Lee has them seated on the same side of the table. I watched this again the other night, and it's quite striking. He's giving it to us in a really stripped down, spare way. You've got the table, the mother and daughter seated on the same side of it. So they'll look towards each other, but they're also looking out towards the camera. We're the camera, we're on the other side of the table. He holds the shot for a really long time. Very few directors would have the nerve to do that nowadays. We have all this quick cutting and camera movement. No. You've got two terrific actors, Marion Jean-Baptiste and Brenda Blethyn. This is the key scene in the whole film, one could argue. And as the women learn about each other and talk back and forth, you know, there's not a clock on the wall, but if there were, you'd be watching actual time go around there as they talk it out. And it's just an absolute knockout. It's, again, for me, a reminder of being theatrical in a positive sense here. Just as when Mike Lee directs on stage, all that background, you know what? You've got strong writing and a key scene and two terrific actors. Let it play out, you know? Don't be fussy. Don't go with fancy camera work or anything like that. Just show it. And the power there really is something. Throughout the film, there are places where he actually will try things with, you know, camera angle and movement, this and that, things that, you know, technically we always as film critics and teachers want to talk about and look for. But there are times when the best approach is not to have an over-designed approach. And I'm getting at not to be fussy that way, just to show it straight on. And, you know, Secrets and Lies has the virtue of that. It has a number of scenes where it just simply presents the characters in a very kind of spare way in a room having an argument. Also, because the actors help to shape their characters, there's a real sense of lived experience here, even if it wasn't necessarily their own personal experience, but drawing on themselves. That's a very theatrical way of approaching it, isn't it? In other words, to have the actor help build the character that way, again, indicative of how Mike Lee works at his best. And Secrets and Lies, you know, would get Academy Award nominations, you know, for screenplay and director and so on. And he also would get those nominations for Vera Drake. Secrets and Lies is 1996, Vera Drake, 2004. These are movies where he's getting a lot of play in American art house theaters. He's getting Academy Award recognition with these nominations. He's really, really becoming very well known as and respected as an international filmmaker at this point.
Well, to add a spontaneous effect to the performances, Mike Lee met with each actor individually and only told them what their character would know at the beginning of the film for Secrets and Lies. As filming progressed, the actors were hearing the secrets for the very first time. So Brenda Blethyn, for instance, did not know that Marianne Jean-Baptiste was Black. And that need to know kind of thing is definitely a hallmark of Mike Lee, because when he did make Vera Drake, and speaking of, you know, everything's a personal story, his mother was a midwife. The film process took about a year because each actor met individually with Mike Lee, discussed their characters' lives from birth up until the moment the film starts. And then they began to rehearse together when their characters met one another. So some of the main actors rehearsed for as long as 6 months before shooting started, discussing, you know, the character's biography and documentation about the period. So the actors read, watched, and listened to period archives that their characters would have been exposed to. So the books, newspapers, movies, TV programs, radio programs, all of that was part of the background, whether they were used in the movie or not. So that kind of effort kind of explains the real life feeling of the movie. Now, except for Imelda Staunton, who plays Vera Drake, the lead, none of the actors knew the film was about abortion until their characters found out. And in fact, during filming, the actors were forbidden to even tell their families what the film was about. So really, that unfolding and need to know is happening with everybody. The actors, the families who went to see the movie, everybody who went to see the movie. So it was filmed without a script, as he likes to do. It was nominated for a 2005 Best Original Screenplay. And Mike Lee said he had to prepare one to send out. But actually, the screenplay that was nominated didn't exist. The film was the screenplay.
Well, you know, in terms of his working method, just to double back briefly on the scene I cited in Secrets and Lies, that key scene where the mother and daughter are reunited like that and have their cup of tea and learn about each other. Since you've mentioned, you know, that the mother is white and the daughter is black, the fact that the actors themselves didn't know all that much going into the movie, you're right. They knew what they needed to know for the moment, and that the sense of discovery is there as they're shooting it. In that scene in particular, initially the mother, Brenda Blethyn's character, is incredulous. She's like, well, and she actually says, it's quite moving, she says to the black daughter, she says, no disrespect, but I was never with a black fella, you know, and you can see the thoughts playing across her face and the actor also coming to terms with what the situation is here. But it's all sort of playing across her. And then it's one of the great bits of acting I've ever seen really is as she looks puzzled, like she's trying to think back all those years to like who she went out with, who might be the father. Suddenly the realization plays across the face. It's nonverbal. She doesn't say it, but someone's like, if you were to verbalize it, oh yeah, there was so-and-so, yeah, that kind of thing.
That guy.
It's that guy moment, right? And then she realizes, well, you know, because the actors only were given, as you say, a certain amount of information in advance, as things are revealed, those revelations are to some extent spontaneous, as in I'm in the moment now, I've just found out this information about, you know, a character, our relationship, and how would my character react? Well, it's also how would the actor react, right? You know, in that moment, how do you act that way? And so again, that's very much a director who's thinking about how in the theater, probably more often in the theater than in film, you will work with actors to build a character and sometimes deliberately parcel out information, what they need to know just before that moment. So let's take it back into Vera Drake now and talk a bit about the story, because Mike Lee does like to have what I call hot button issues. Certainly in Secrets and Lies, in terms of adoption policy and just the personal politics of adoption, like what are the advantages and potential pitfalls of learning who you are, what you come from? You know, I mean, it's not an easy path, is it? And so it takes us through all that on an emotional level. But then, of course, I would say even more pointedly in terms of where the law is concerned would be, you know, the whole issue of abortion. Why don't Marie talk about that in Vera Drake? Because of all the movies ever made about that subject, I think it's one of the most emotionally powerful.
Well, she plays a woman who helps women terminate their pregnancies, but it's all, you know, on the down low, and it's all, of course, not advertised. And, you know, if depending on how well you pay attention, it doesn't occur to you what's really happening until you're kind of well into the movie, based on, you know, somebody's real life story, of course. And very similar to the French movie with Isabelle Huppert, the title of which escapes me at the moment. But the same, you know, again, a real life person, the story of, you know, what women had to go through to, you know, in this time period, and rendered in a really gritty, definitely working class, everyday folks kind of approach that Mike Lee likes to do. I believe I saw it as part of Columbia Film Society. I don't remember if there was a discussion afterwards. I do remember it being a real gut punch of a movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's on that short list of his greatest films. Secrets and Lies is there for me. Life is Sweet, which is actually a lot gentler viewing, if you will. But Vera Drake, again, two or three other films, Naked, where you have a really strong emotional arc. And I think he works so exceptionally well with that group of actors. And when you have an actor like Imelda Staunton, for instance, in Vera Drake, let her do what she does. You know, like the camera often just will hold on her, right? And you'll see emotions play across her face. We should talk about other films, because he's done films that don't quite fit into the categories we've been talking about, that kind of working class, politically conscious cinema. He's done some other things too.
Well, we're coming down to our last 5 minutes, but I did want to mention in terms of that, One of the things he has said is, given the choice of Hollywood or poking steel pins in my eyes, I prefer steel pins. But I will say that I think the most Hollywood of his movies is 2014's Mr. Turner, which is about the British artist. It has, you know, the setting and the sweeping vistas and the beautiful look that you would expect out of, you know, same sort of movie made by any other director. This is one of those movies, though, that apparently 60,000 people have downloaded, because it was one of the movies in 2014 when Sony Pictures was hacked and a lot of those movies were, you know, downloaded by the public. I don't know if that hurt the sales, or I mean the box office for Mr. Turner when it finally did come out. I will say, though, that in 2012, 2 years ago, one of Turner's paintings does appear in Skyfall. You know, maybe it was a premonition that the Mr. Turner movie was coming. And by the way, of course, playing Turner is Timothy Spall.
Well, think about this. We've been talking about Mike Lee in terms of contemporary stories, working class Britain today, if you will. But he's done other films that are period pieces, which are not spare in their presentation, have a lot of production value. Topsy Turvy in 1999, again, with his theatrical background, he is interested in Gilbert and Sullivan. And he does a film that's really enjoyable, and it's enjoyable as a period piece. It doesn't exactly play as heritage cinema. Mike Lee's still Mike Lee. But again, capable of getting out of that box that I've been putting him in terms of working class ethos, to do a period piece like Topsy Turvy, or as Marie mentioned, Mr. Turner, 2014, where it's very much a biopic about the great British painter. And, you know, it has beautiful imagery in terms of the cinematography, in terms of the period decor and all that. But it's also tough sometimes in terms of, you know, what society was like, what class structure was like in Great Britain at that time. Or, you know, much more recently than that, even Peterloo in 2018, which I've got mixed feelings about as a film. But again, dealing with labor strife in 19th century Britain, that's a whole different bailiwick. That's a whole different consideration for a filmmaker. You're not just taking your camera out into a working class neighborhood today. You have to have constructed sets and period costumes and all that period flavor. And Mike Lee does it, and he does it very well. So he's certainly capable of doing that kind of period piece as well as the contemporary stories.
Well, for any of our listeners who have a particular yen to learn more about Mike Lee or more about British film, they should seriously consider taking your British film class in spring 2021.
And thank you for the advertisement.
And that brings us to the end of our episode. Don't forget to check out our other episodes on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you next time at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.